What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
That was James White on the Money Down podcast. Who's this, by the way, Andy? Come on. You don't know? This is a recognizable song.
I don't know.
I'll give
Red
you a
Man.
And? Who's Red Man?
LL Cool song? J.
No. It's Method Man or Red Man.
I'll say anything he says in my ear. Just so you know.
Put it in the prompter. Ron will read it.
Very similar. So if you yelled something in my ear like inappropriate, don't F with me because I'm going to like just regurgitate.
Yeah, we learned that during Schefter yesterday.
What happened there?
They were the ones who set me up for the question.
I asked.
Oh.
Skiz was like, I'd like to know whatever.
If he would change the Rooney Rule.
And that's what he's like, what do you want me to change? And I was like, I don't know. Define spirit. That's why I asked you. We have you on to answer questions, not ask them, Adam. Plus, it came in my left ear from the producer. Stiz, last time I take a question.
Notice whose fault it never is, by the way.
Mine.
Ever.
Yeah, welcome to my
never,
world.
Ever, ever.
Now you know how my wife feels.
That was the Rockwiler.
That was the Rockwiler by Method Man and Red Man here on WEEI.
Casey Kasem.
Nothing but hip-hop all day long. 617-779-7937.
Can I ask a question since
you guys
know everything? Yes. You raised your hand.
What's the... it works for Stiz, so if I want to talk, I'll just demand. Mm-hmm. Either one of you, what is the song that sampled the Knight Rider thing? Can I request that?
I can't picture the Knight Rider song.
Someone definitely sampled it. I don't believe it was a big hit, though.
No, probably not. It was just Little Fat Andy loved Knight Rider in the 80s or whatever. And like I heard it one day. I was like, hey, that's the Knight Rider
That was
thing.
The show where like the car used to talk,
Kit.
Right?
Yeah. It's a black car. Michael Knight, the Knight Foundation's got the little red thing in the front. Doesn't stand up, so don't go watch it. Seriously. I tried to make my kids watch it once. It is unwatchable.
Oh, is it Busta Rhymes, maybe? I think there's a Busta Rhymes song that samples that
I
show.
Stumped the geniuses?
I think. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what song it is, but I think there's a Busta Rhymes song that samples Knight Rider. Anyway, that was James White, and he thinks Josh McDaniels is a good offensive coordinator. He's the best offensive coordinator I ever had, only offensive coordinator I ever had, which I didn't realize that about him, by the way, but I guess that makes sense. And he thinks it's good to bring him back and that he'll be good here in New England. And listen, I kind of agree. I don't think that he'll be a bad choice. I don't love what the choice represents in terms of the way that they're holding on to the past just so desperately instead of trying to go off in a new direction and try something else. Now, you can make the argument they tried something else last year with Gerard Mayo. I disagree. Gerard Mayo is a guy who was in-house. That wasn't really trying something new. He was inexperienced, so it was new to him. But you weren't going outside the box at all. And Josh McDaniels is most certainly not an outside-the-box type of hire. I think we all agree with that. Even if he is potentially their best option. And I'm kind of coming around to the idea that if you really care about continuity, and I do care about continuity. I don't want Drake May to have three different OCs in his first 3 years. If you care about that type of stuff, McDaniels may be, him or Van Pelt, may be the best option.
So first of all, I don't care what James White thinks. No disrespect. He's okay. Your offensive coordinator. Like, you're biased.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to get an honest answer. Unless
he didn't like him, yeah.
You're right. If he pulled a Jackson Smith and Jigba, it was like,
good luck.
I don't know. But if he says, I love him, well, yeah, you should love your coach. Like, he did a good job, whatever. And we know he's a competent candidate. There's a reason he's very much in the conversation. It's not ridiculous. I did want to bring my poll to the show.
Gross.
Because I'm big on polls lately on Twitter, and I appreciate the interaction the fans are giving. So I put my poll out today, and it was, if Josh McDaniels is hired as the Patriots offensive coordinator, how will you feel about it? Pumped, great fit was one option. Hate it was another, and meh, guess it's okay.
You can put me in the meh camp.
Okay.
I didn't vote in this. Let me vote on it right now.
You'd have a lot of friends in your Met camp.
Skew the results, yeah.
But not the majority. The majority of fans are 54% pumped, great fit. 41% say, meh, guess it's okay. So that is 95% of Patriots fans are at least okay with the idea of bringing in Josh
McDaniels.
Yeah, only
5% hate it. That's interesting. I guess there's not really a big, sexy name out there for offensive coordinator at the time.
You nailed it.
That's the reason,
right? There is no other option. Yeah. And not even, is there not a sexy one? We haven't even sort of all committed to an unsexy one. Even if there was one unsexy.
Kaylee and LaFleur
like just
and
one
some of
name.
Yeah, right.
All I hear is Kaylee and LaFleur and AVP and Wes Phillips and Josh McKay. Mm-hmm. If we all
and
got together.
And you're the only one saying Wes Phillips, but
yeah, it's true. But you know how like early on in the process, there's like 20 candidates for the primaries.
Right.
Everybody's just like overwhelmed. It's like, talk to me when you narrow it down a little bit. If we all said Wes Phillips, if we just said my guy, Wes Phillips, Wes Phillips, Wes Phillips, Wes Phillips, I think the voting would change. But right now, no one is proposing a legitimate alternative. No one is proposing anyone that is in any way interesting. And it's like, well, okay, I guess McDaniel. I mean, he's been here. He's done some good things. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the one answer. My other part of this is he has spent time trying to upgrade, alter, modernize, simplify his offense in the last year. I know that. Like, he's been working, getting information from colleges and programs and doing different things. What that leads to, I have no idea, because I'm a little dubious of that, if we're being honest. I think sometimes it's hard for those guys that have so much success to really alter it. They may want to, and then they start, and they're like, but I don't know. I do this, and it kind of worked for me, and they have all these plays in their mind that worked. Why would I cut that page out? Why would I cut, like, and he does have a massive playbook, and that'll be a challenge for not only Drake May, Bort.
My son is named Bort also.
Jalen Poor.
Come on, Bort. Let's
Polk,
go.
Tet McMillan, whoever they bring in. Like, there's going to be a challenge there. So I like the idea of Josh McDaniels. The biggest question I have for you, and it seems like a lot of people have this issue, who wants Josh McDaniels?
The Patriots? Who in the Patriots?
How about
Josh McDaniels?
A more specific name?
I would imagine that it is a familiar name, and that makes him attractive to the Kraft family.
Yes.
Yes.
Does that bother you?
Yes.
So, does it bother you that maybe Mike Vrabel is like us? He doesn't really have a better answer, so he's just going to.
So
say,
this guy's going to get foisted upon him, and that's how it's going to go. I don't like that at all.
Foisted seems negative.
Foisted, but that's it, right? I mean, if we agree that Elliott Wolf is kind of getting foisted on him here too, why wouldn't they also foist Josh McDaniels?
Because Elliott Wolf, I think Vrabel has a better answer. His name is Ryan Cowden, and so there's this weird. Okay, we'll make it all work. If he is like the rest of us at the OC position, and didn't really, even if it was Tommy Rees, I don't know if it was or wasn't. Tommy Rees is not the most exciting of candidates. It's not a better name. It's not an easy sell. And if Mike
Tommy Rees said, no, I'm going to go do something else here.
Right. But if Mike Vrabel, not Mike Rees, Tommy Rees, Mike Vrabel, if Mike Vrabel doesn't have a strong counterpoint to when Robert says, you know, Josh McDaniels, A, is right down the street. B, has had a lot of success here. And also, interestingly, Adam Schefter was very quick to point out Josh McDaniels getting paid by the Raiders, so it'll be, what do you say, a friendly contract?
Yeah, probably,
And we know the Krafts. Hell, I'm not going to say the Krafts. All businessmen like friendly contracts. Mm-hmm. It's a friendly contract. So I just think that it was so telling that I gave Schefter the chance to promote candidates, and one name was said.
Yeah.
The same one I would have said. I'm the dummy who's local and has the, you know, I'm not talking to every team and texting all the time. Adam Schefter couldn't come up with another name?
How's this for a theory? Last year, no one wanted this job, right? No one wanted to be the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots last year. It was a job that many people passed on.
Right.
Over a dozen people, I think, was the report, said, thank you, we're going to go a different direction, or I'm going to go back to the team I already coach, or whatever it is it's going to be. And Nick Caley went on to be a tight ends coach with the Rams instead of being the OC here. Everyone picked something else. I know Drake May's here, and that's different from last year. But the offense was still a bottom three offense in points and in yards. Okay, so You look at it and you think, well, people are going to want to come and coach Drake May. Sure, right. Yeah, why wouldn't everybody want to do that? You still are a terrible offense. And an offensive coordinator getting his first job on a terrible offense, if they could go somewhere else, like the Vegas Raiders scored more points than the Patriots last year. They're not a better team, I don't think, necessarily. No. And they have a much worse quarterback situation. But that kind of paints the picture a little bit, doesn't it? Like, Drake May on his own wasn't enough to make this offense more than the worst offense in the league. And that, I think, is going to make, whether you want to buy it or not, it still makes this an unattractive job. It still makes this an unattractive destination, I think.
No, I think it's an attractive job.
Do you?
Yeah.
One of the worst offenses in the league last year with Drake May.
Yeah, but it's Drake May and what you think you can do with him.
Then why is this taking so long?
Because I don't know if there's good candidates. That's the other thing. The good offensive minds...
I don't think it's a good destination.
The good offensive minds are either head coaches or candidates to be head coaches. They're not coming to be your offensive coordinator. I think that's the problem. Is there... The pipeline may not have regenerated or refilled itself enough. Mm. And you're taking a risk, I think, on my guy, Wes Phillips, Josh McCown, Nick Cayley. All those guys have one thing in common. They don't call plays.
Right.
They're not a play caller. So you're giving them a first-time opportunity, and there may be some stink there on the Crafts, anything. Last year, they went first-time everybody. Well, Mike Vrabel's not a first-time.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to go the other way this year and nobody's going to be a first-timer? I don't know. Is it reactionary? I think that could be part of this calculation here in what they're doing.
Well, that's stupid, first of all. It's stupid to do that. Well, everybody was
yes,
right. Nobody can be a first-timer this year, and everybody has to the year before. That's just a dumb way to do things.
And everybody has to be a first-timer sometime.
Exactly.
And we did the rundown. Remember when we did the rundown?
They just don't have to do it at once.
We did all the coaches that are good.
Mm-hmm.
Were good their first time.
Right.
There's plenty of bad ones the first time, too, but all of the good coaches were pretty much good the first time they took the job.
Yeah.
So do that with offensive coordinator, right? Ben Johnson's good. Joe Brady's good. Those guys had to have a first job somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
Find one of those. Now, the problem is Ben Johnson's going to the Raiders, and Joe Brady's got, like, and you got to, the pipeline is a little lacking of exciting candidates unless you just do the, did he ever coach for McVay?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll take him.
We'll take him. Shanahan guy? No problem. Bring him on in. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Here's Dan Ball to tell you what's trending. We'll talk with Tommy Curran at 3:30. That's coming up next.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. The Celtics fell to the Toronto Raptors last night 110-97. The defeat snapped Boston's 10-game winning streak against Toronto. Peyton Pritchard led the Celtics with 20 points coming off the bench. Boston returns home tomorrow night when they host the Orlando Magic. They have a 4-3 record in the month of January so far. In football news, Bill Belichick's first coaching staff at North Carolina continues to come together. Longtime NFL special teams coach Mike Prefer and veteran SEC offensive line coach Will Friend are expected to finalize deals to join Belichick's staff. That being said, reports this morning claim that there is no fully executed and signed contract between Belichick and UNC at this time. Belichick was announced as North Carolina's head coach on December the 11th. And in NFL news, the city of Cleveland filed a lawsuit against the Browns to prevent the team's planned move to a new dome stadium in Brook Park, Ohio. The city alleges that a Browns move would violate the Modell Law, an Ohio law that placed conditions on how teams can leave their publicly financed facilities. On the ice, the Bruins are off until Saturday when they visit the Ottawa Senators. Puck drop is set for 3 p.m. And finally, Bob Uecker, the voice of his hometown Milwaukee Brewers, who after a short playing career earned the moniker Mr. Baseball and honors from the Hall of Fame, has passed away. He was 90 years old. Being more healthy, eating better, losing weight, are you accomplishing your New Year's goal? It's 10 times easier with some help. Do what Andy Hart, Rob Bradford, Chris Scheinman, over 23,000 others have done. Find your results at Awaken180WeightLoss.com. I'm Dan Ball. This is trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Tommy Curran joins Afternoons with Arcan and Hart coming up right after this.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Brian Hoyer talking about his buddy Mike Vrabel, who he just didn't talk back to. He didn't start a bleep talking dialogue with him because he'd go for the throat.
Yep.
I believe that. You can kind of tell just by looking at him. He's that kind of guy. You don't even have to hear him talk. You just look at him. You're like, yeah, it's a guy. It's a guy who probably gives it pretty good. You know.
You know what I found out about him this week that I did not know that breaks my rule?
What's that?
He's an only child.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't tend to like only children.
Mm.
It's just a general thing in my life I've noticed.
Either you guys only children back there?
Oldest of four.
Wow.
I have a younger sister, thank God.
And a younger
sister. Like you both. You're good people.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yep. You? I have a little brother. What do you have?
I have I'm two an sisters child. And a couple half siblings. No, that would be funny.
Hates himself.
And then you'd be like, that explains a lot.
It certainly does. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I have two sisters and a couple, three half siblings. So
okay.
There's plenty
it.
Of them rolling around. So
yeah,
I just generally think. Those types of people grow up a certain lifestyle in a certain way, and it just kind of paints the picture of who they are. Mike Vrabel, to me, is not like one of them.
Mm.
He's a ball buster like he grew up in a Gronk house.
Yeah.
Like he had to deal with crap his whole life, and you had to fight for everything you got. And
you had to fight for every last French fry. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's what he seems like.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like him, but yeah, no, I wouldn't advise getting into a back and forth with him, especially this team. Nobody. I would say nobody on this team. Okay, maybe David Andrews. If you want to talk a little bit, I can't think of another person who, in experience, stature, whatever, should say one thing to Mike Vrabel. It won't go well.
Yeah.
Gonzo, you might be getting there in a year or two, somewhere in that phase.
He doesn't strike me as a big talker, but I don't know. Sometimes on the field, you see him going at
Oh, yeah.
It,
that,
you know?
Well, that's that whole Stephon Gilmore comparison. Like,
right.
He says it softly, but you're like, what'd you say?
Yeah.
Did you say what I think?
Did you just whisper something really mean to me? It's not nice.
But other than that, like, no. Y'all keep your mouth shut. Y'all are not on that level, and he will destroy you. And that might be part of what he needs to bring to this team in the rebuilding of the culture and the competitive nature and the dogfight and non-soft and all those things.
Sure, if it works. I mean, you know, if he's able to lead by example and not just be an a-hole to everybody, like, you have to have some substance behind it, I guess is the point.
Oh, sure.
Same thing with, guys like Vermeil and you know, Gerard Mayo and guys who are very sort of hands-off and touchy-feely or whatever.
Perfect.
And that's, you know, it's different. You have to be able to back it up with substance.
Right.
And it can't just be big personality or certain personality. Like, everybody, all coaches have, successful and otherwise, have different personalities.
Sure.
That's not really what dictates the success of their teams.
Do you doubt his substance?
Do I doubt Vrabel's substance?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Ooh.
A little bit.
Ooh.
Just based on the way it ended there, I feel like people are really over-pumping it, and that's kind of, I just naturally want to push back on that. I feel like everybody's just so enthralled by his personality. And, you know, I do think that he was a good coach. I don't think he was a bad coach in Tennessee, but it did not end great there. And I think he's coming into a situation here in New England that's a lot like the situation he was at the end in Tennessee. A bad roster, kind of a weird relationship maybe with between ownership in the front office and maybe some of the coaching staff, not all super copacetic there. And he can come in and fix that maybe. You know, if he does, that's great. But I just feel like this is closer to the bad years in Tennessee, what he's going to be walking into, than the good years.
Right. And he interrupted Greg on that, I think. Something culture, something. Mm. He's like, we got fired because we didn't win enough games.
Right.
Like, he boiled it down pretty simply, which is why I do think it's interesting that he's distanced himself from winning early on.
Mm.
And most of his comments have been in relation to effort and things they can do. There's been no specific, like, we got to win games right away.
Right.
But you can't be specific about it either. That was actually a mistake, I thought.
Yeah,
Gerard
we can't
made.
Go out and win nine games this year. You can't put a number on
no,
it.
No, like, I mean, he also, like Gerard said, we're going to win games.
I guarantee we'll win more games than last year is what
but
Gerard
said. But
then
he also said, we're going to win games, maybe not this year. And I was like, wait, what? Are you already looking past this? You can't act.
Robert said that, too.
We all know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Don't really specify it and voice it. It's not a great look.
True. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Tommy Curran joins the show in a few minutes. Here's Tony in West Springfield. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, so there's a lot of parallel. Listen, so O.J. Mayo, right, he got basically Bill Belichick's team. They invested nothing else. He had to take Bill.
O.J. Mayo, Gerard Mayo. O.J. Mayo is a basketball player.
Gerard Mayo. I'm sorry.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So, he had to take that roster from players he didn't pick. And and this is what we're grading him on. And now Vrabel is going to take over, and the Patriots have to spend money because of the bargain agreement, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like they're going to invest. He's getting a whole different layout. So it's almost like the Rooney Rule interviewing thing. I feel like Kraft totally, like, tanked last year, and here he is. He's going to invest a bunch of money, and Vrabel's going to look great. They're going to win 8 or 9 games because they're going to invest money. They're going to get players, and they're going to support Vrabel when they did none of that last year for Mayo.
Yeah, Tony, they mostly re-signed their own guys last year, very mm-hmm. famously, of a 4-win team, which people questioned at the time, and it ended up being very, very reasonable to question that. You're going to bring back pretty much everyone from this crappy 4-win team that Bill Belichick, great Bill Belichick, couldn't even squeeze more than a handful of wins out of, and you're going to give that to Jerod Mayo. Now, Mayo didn't exactly help himself. But that's a fair point, right? Like, the roster, we agree, is the bigger problem than the coach last year.
Yes, yeah. And the roster should be better this year with, at the very least, another top 5 pick and money spent mm-hmm. externally. Not right. money spent to keep people, but actually bring in, even if they're not great, you should have better talent when you spend $100 million, $130 million to upgrade the roster. It's not dissimilar to what I feel about Belichick at UNC.
Mm.
Yeah, they committed $20 million to their NIL.
Yeah.
They should get better. Is that his coaching, or did they just go buy better players in NIL deals?
Good point.
And Mac Brown should be like, wait a minute. If you had given me $20 million worth of NIL players, I would have won more games, too.
Yeah, probably. There are other, not just at wide receiver. I mean, you know, Khalil Mack's a free agent this year. There's a lot of good free agents who are going to be on the block yes. this year, unless they get re-signed, which could happen. But
middling,
like,
veterans, that could be interesting.
Yeah, which maybe you're not. We talk about teams being in their cycles. Maybe the Patriots aren't in the cycle for guys like that yet, but they should be. You should always be ready to bring in more talent when yes. you're a team like this, even if they're 30 or 33 years old, whatever. Like that, I'm fine with that. And, you know, there's some guys like that who are going to be out there. The kid for the tackle from Minnesota, if he hits the market, like Robinson, like that could be an interesting thing to look into. But again, in free agency, yeah, you have all this money. They're going to have to re-sign some of their guys. You know, it's just the roster's not big, or it's too big to go into it and turn over 50% like you want them to do.
I'm betting and I'm
hoping.
Which
I also want them to do, too, by the way. I don't like this roster. I like it if they flipped a bunch of it. But that's just, I think, tough to imagine that realistically happening.
And then the other thing that the caller brings up, Tony brings up, is the whole timetable got expedited, right? Like, they thought Bill Belichick was going to be here for 2. He was here for 1.
Right.
And then when they brought Mayo in, they thought it was going to be a multi-year rebuild. But things were so ugly with Bill, you had to get rid of him. Mm. And then things were so ugly with Mayo, you had to get rid of him. You couldn't stick with the plan. And that's why it all went awry.
Yeah. And now here we are. Hoping it's all going to change.
It's all on Vrabel.
Under the Mike Vrabel regime, which has now begun. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. But joining us right now here on the phone is your friend and mine, NBC Sports Boston's own Tom E. Kern. He's brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Massachusetts' top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. And by Wise Snacks. No one does crunchy, salty, or cheesy better than Wise Snacks. Tom E. Kern, how are we doing today?
OJ Mayo. The hell.
I was like, where is this call going? OJ Mayo. But yeah, eventually figured it out. Tom, nice to have you on today. Let's go ahead and start with the Mike Vrabel of it all, as he has now been installed as the head coach, and more so than that, it seems like he's going to be kind of the CEO of this team. Is that fair to say? Is that how you'd characterize what his role is going to be here? Schefter said he's going to be the man. You've basically said he's going to be the man. That's it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Man, the preamble. Let's cut to the chase here.
Okay.
He is the capo di tutti capo. And I think that we have a tendency, whether it be on television, radio, or even in your private conversation with friends, to theorize that, oh, boy, who's got the hammer? Who's the last guy? Who's got the final word? And I think that teams try to avoid that to get to a point where there's rancor. And I know we can point to the situation with John Robinson and Mike Vrabel in Tennessee with A.J. Brown. But if you really look closely at that situation, Vrabel was in constant contact with A.J. Brown about trading him to Philadelphia because it became untenable to get a contract done. His disgust wasn't with necessarily John Robinson overruling him. It was disgust with having to move on from him for whatever constraints. So guys don't generally get to the point where they're at each other's throats. And we certainly hear of times when it happened. Bill Parcells here, overruled by his staff, making the right call, by the way, on Terry Glenn. Mm.
but it generally doesn't get to that point. So Vrabel does, I believe, have final say, but it's with support. That's my best understanding of Elliott Wolff's role. Support, support, support. What do you need, Mike? I'm going to provide that to you.
Tom,
and he will do that.
Tighten up because I'm about to blow smoke.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, I thought you got the most interesting piece of audio from Monday out of Mike Vrabel in your stand-up with him. The comment that I'm paraphrasing a little, but basically there were some limitations that prevented right. Elliott from investing totally in personnel. Then I watched you on TV admit, I don't really know what that word investment meant there because I didn't know exactly what he meant. Have you been able? Have you been able to dig a little deeper, ascertain now what the hell that meant?
Yeah, I get some clarity, and it had nothing to do with finances. More to do with so many people in their first year in their positions that people were spread thinly, and Wolf was as well. Again, as I said when we discussed this briefly the other day, doesn't excuse Chukwuma Okorafor or Caden Wallace. Why did I mention him? He's fine. Or Chukwuma Okorafor or,
KJ Osborne.
Yes, thank you. Caden Wallace is fine. I'm not slandering him yet. But it does explain that there were a lot of people in their first year in their positions, Elliott Wolff included, Gerard Mayo included. So it kind of went, in hindsight, the way we feared it might. I remember talking to my guy, right, Mike Reese, and your guy too, Mike Reese. Mm. And he looked at me with that Reesean face on. He goes, how do you think this is going to go? I said, it might be pretty tough. We all kind of suspected it might be, and it was.
Yep. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that if you wasn't
sure. Did I answer that question?
He caught you with one of those pauses again,
I wasn't sure if that was a pause you were going to keep going or not.
Did I answer that question on the investment?
Yeah, because I think some people.
It was an investment of time.
Right. Some people wondered if it was just finance, and immediately their connection is, oh, he's got limitations put in place by Robert and Jonathan. The Crafts were imposing some sort of limitations, and I think it's good to clear that up if that wasn't the case. I think that's important.
No, he was spread very thin. And again, and I think that there is probably a continued, well, it wasn't us. We gave him the players. They just couldn't coach him. That goes on that is certainly, it's probably true to a degree. You're just not supposed to say it.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say it. Right. Especially when you hired some of the coaches on that side of the ball, Elliott.
Good point.
Right.
With that in mind, when you're trying to strike a balance between the dictatorial way that Bill Belichick sort of ran everything and the collaborative way of Gerard Mayo, how do you strike that balance with a big personality like someone like Mike Vrabel?
You hope that Mike is amenable to doing it. You hope that Mike has the emotional IQ to be able to understand that when he yields the floor is yielded to you, and you should step up with some courage, make your points. And I think that as much as Elliott Wolff looks, you know, like a deer in the headlights when he is at the podium, he must have some acumen. I mean, people speak very highly of him. We don't see the best of him at the podium, but I'm sure that he can confidently speak about the things that he believes in after the amount of time he spent in the league. He doesn't have a lot of pelts on the wall for great successes. But, you know, I would imagine that Mike would be the one who allows people to say, all right, I know I got a big personality and people don't want to get pooped on by me, but I have to give them the latitude and room to make their, to do their jobs. And that's where I think there's a big difference. There's an ongoing comparison to Bill Parcells this week. Bill was kind of a bully. I don't think Vrabel's necessarily a bully because he does a lot of it with a smile on his face. And he also seems to be less of an angle guy than the two Bills who have preceded him here as head coach of the Patriots. I really do think he's authentic and not a guy whose loyalty will depend upon what you can do for him.
So I wasn't going to ask you this, but you just struck a nerve when you brought up the comparisons because they've been everywhere. A comparison I've made, which is a little bit of a stretch because this guy was never a head coach, but is Dante Scarnecchia, who's a guy that could bully the hell out of people, but then also they loved him. They cried about him. They wanted to hug him. They would do anything for him. Do you think there's anything to maybe sort of that comparison?
Yeah, because Dante could be, as we know, an exceptionally gentle and kind individual with those, you know, nice Italian brown eyes. Oh, he's so nice. And then you hear him on the field.
Oh, my God.
Just absolutely demolishing Gronk and Hernandez in their first training camp. It was hysterical. Not hysterical. It was like, it was kind of funny, actually. But, I think that's a good comp. But I think Mike is unique. And they haven't had a coach quite like him because he was a player and a very talented player. And I think that his empathy that he shows the players in terms of what he was talking about the other day is very genuine. That said, he is going to be a bear for these guys in their first 6 months on the job. He's not going to be Mr. Oh, really? Oh, your kid's he's got a dance recital. Okay, you know, you don't have to come in. I just, you got a family crisis. Take whatever time you need, but you're not going to bail out because your wife has a dentist appointment and you know the kids need a sitter. Figure that out.
Yeah, we're talking with Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, is there now or is there about to be any kind of major shakeups in the front office or maybe even above that with this team?
I don't think there'll be major. No, I think that there's speculation about different individuals perhaps leaving. Robin Glazer, who has constantly been, had her role overstated, I think is kind of a symbolic individual to talk about the Kraft's meddling. She's a contracts person, a salary cap person, a, what do they call that? When you have to compliance person. more
Nailed
than anything else.
It. Cracked himself up, too.
I led myself right to it. She always had been, and she did those things for Bill. And during the period of time, she felt overlooked, I believe, over the course of Bill Belichick's tenure. So she had hoped that things would be a little different after Bill left, and she'd get a little bit more credit and a little bit more of a forward-facing opportunity. And in so doing, I think she put herself out there as being a mover and a shaker with the football team. And when you say that, I think you have to be intuitive if you're an individual to understand that people only care about the football team vis-a-vis the X's and friggin' O's and the wins. They don't care that much about the contracts, only as it affects the on-field product. So when the on-field product sucks, anybody who poked their head up and said, hey, I'm part of this, is going to get blamed, especially if you have the narrative here that is longstanding, that Kraft tend to be meddlers. And this is another individual who now can be perceived as meddling. And Bill Belichick knew and knows that bringing up Robin Glazer is a tremendous opportunity to kick the Kraft in the shins. And Bill's within his rights. He's been kicked in the shins multiple times in the last 2 years by the Kraft. Not that he didn't deserve it, but it got overboard. So Robin Glazer became a chew toy in the mix for these two sides. And I don't know if that's going to be a role that she continues in, whether by her volition or the team, or probably by her volition, because I think she does a lot of the poop work in there that nobody else has ever really done, and she would be a loss in that regard.
Tom, yesterday I asked Adam Schefter on here an open-ended question about the offensive coordinator search, and I thought it was kind of interesting. The only name he brought up was Josh McDaniels. So is that telling, or is that sort of a bag job yet again? Is Josh McDaniels going to be the OC?
I would imagine so. And that's based on no conversations with... No, I mean, it's based on no current conversations.
Yep.
Josh has opportunities, I think, throughout the league and throughout professional football. So we'll see what he ends up deciding to do. I think the Patriots are going to have options too. They could go and get Nick Cayley. They could go and get Phil Perry mentioned a guy to me earlier today. He was the quarterback's coach.
Wes
last
Phillips.
Year with,
no.
What was the name again?
Wes Phillips.
Yeah, QB coach with Tennessee?
Nope. Different guy.
Okay. Charles, I believe.
Charles London? Charles London.
Yes.
Yeah, I used to sit right outside his door. I shared a cube. Right. Nice guy.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about him.
Nicest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, he spent 20 years
Yeah.
Going from a stadium guy, he played football with Duke.
Yep.
He was a stadium guy with the Patriots. And Phil mentioned him to me. He's like, you heard of this guy, Charles London?
Yeah.
So, you know, looking him up. So
I'm rooting for him. That'd be a great story. He used to be like setting up contracts and now concerts, and now he'd be like running the offense. That'd be the greatest story ever.
Well, and I think that, again, that you have to be hypersensitive to the way the fan base reacts to that, and you want to do the solid. He's not Don Law Promotions. He did play football at a high level at Duke, and he's been a coach for 20 years. So I think people go, we got a project guy running it.
It's like Bill bringing in the lacrosse coaches. It's like kind of the same thing.
Yeah, so
it'd be creative.
But I think it's Josh. It would. I think Josh makes the most sense, and I think that Arcand kicks back on that because he's like, you want somebody a little more novel and plugged in. Is that correct, Christian?
Yeah, basically. Just someone who's, you know, maybe going to take him in a different direction, and someone who's not just in their Rolodex and someone they're familiar with, because I feel like they've fallen into that pattern a lot. And I also wonder, Tom, he may be someone that would jump at a job like this, but despite Drake May being here, this was still a bottom offense in the NFL last year. Is it how much more of an attractive destination would you say it is for a potential offensive coordinator now as opposed to last year?
Probably 90% more attractive. I bet they wouldn't have the head coach they have right now if it wasn't for Drake May. You still had Bailey Zappe running around out there, or Jacoby Brissett, or Mac. It would not be as attractive a destination. You have a guy who's got the potential, has at least shown glimpses of being a player who could be a top 7, top 5 quarterback and a perennial Pro Bowler. That's the hardest position. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know. Hardest position to fill. They appear to have capably filled it.
Well, there you go. Tommy Kern, great to talk with you.
That
was a good pause.
That pause got him.
I'll be talking with you again once football season starts back up. As you know, there's going to be some changes here at the station. I'm kicking up tonight. So it's been a pleasure, sir. And we'll be talking again when football season fires back up. You'll be talking with Ted and Andy and Fitzy now from now on.
I appreciate your great patience with me, Christian, when I was a baby and didn't like your questions. And I wish you great luck in the evening.
I'll work on those questions. Maybe next time we talk, they'll be better for you.
Great. Great. Anytime you need me at night, I'm happy to help.
That's very nice. Thank you. Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's Tommy Kern.
No chance he answers that call.
Joining us. Yeah, I'm not even going to bother.
Hey, Tom, I got a 9:30 opening. I could use it. Did you say 9:30?
You'd be like, who is this? 617.
No chance.
779-7937. I got a better chance of getting Schefter on, probably. I would agree with that. 779-7937. Quick break. When we return, we lost a legend today. Two legends, as a matter of fact. One in the sports world, one in the world of film. I guess you could say the sports guy was in the world of film as well. We'll get into our eulogies for both Bob Uecker and David Lynch. Right after this.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Rick Vaughn has come on to try and nail it down against Felipe Aguilar, a dangerous right-handed batter. Here's the pitch.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches. Boy, how can these guys lay off pitches that close? Just a reminder, fans, about Die Hard Night coming up here at the stadium. Free admission to anyone who was actually alive the last time the Indians won a pennant.
Oh, man.
So good.
What a legend. Bob Uecker passed away today in Menomonee Falls, Wisconsin.
That sounds nice.
At the age of 90. I'd like to hear him say the word Menomonee Falls. I bet it'd be funny just hearing that. He's one of those guys, no matter what he's talking about, it's always funny. Like, just hearing him talk is funny. There's people like that.
Harry Carey and those guys.
Yeah, and there's some people who I just look at him and I start laughing. Like Larry David, you know?
Yep.
He doesn't even have to talk. I just look at him. I start laughing. Will Ferrell was like that, too, like early on in SNL.
Adam Sandler's got a little bit of that.
Sandler, too. There's a lot of examples
kinda
of guys like
happy.
That.
Kind of makes you happy.
Uecker was one of those guys. Uecker, you see him, you know, as soon as he opens his mouth, whether it was on a late-night talk show, whether it was in a movie, whether it was as a guest on a show or something like that, he was always funny. I mean, just every single time. He was naturally funny. I'm so jealous of people who are naturally funny, because I'm not. I try very hard to be funny, and I'm not.
I agree.
I really try hard,
just kidding.
Just fall flat every single time.
No, not every time.
Most of the time.
Some of them.
I got you with that D's Nuts joke. That was funny. I got you with that one.
Well, you might hear that tomorrow, actually.
Oh, really?
We do the best of our long stint as a show.
We're doing that? That's great.
I told the guys to get some stuff together, and that might be one of the highlights.
Okay. Yeah, we were thinking rejoins when we come back, just with stupid stuff.
All right, that works. Yeah.
Save you some work on your last day.
Bob Uecker played. And right. I know he wasn't a great player, but that adds a layer of it, too, that you become sort of this, is he a cultural icon? Is that too much? But also a player, like, that's a cool story.
He played in the majors for six seasons, 1962 to 1967. He wasn't very good.
I don't care.
He did play with Bob Gibson, six seasons.
Six seasons in Major League Baseball.
Hit 14 home runs.
The show. That's 14 more than you hit.
Oh, absolutely.
No, I'm not taking a shot at you. I'm saying everybody listening, basically.
I'm claiming to have played them.
Everybody not named Lou Maloney listening.
Right.
You didn't make the major leagues. I don't care if he sucked for 6 years. He was there for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was the best baseball player. I always tell my kids this. Like, you say a guy sucks, he was the best baseball player that ever played at his high school.
Yeah.
His little league field is named after him. His high school field is probably named after him because he's in the big leagues for 6 years.
He played for the Milwaukee Braves. That's how far back he goes. Milwaukee Braves. And he was in the Army, too. I remember reading this.
I didn't even know that.
There was a lot of guys back then, you know, you served in the Army, and then you'd go play baseball, or you'd go do whatever. Or you were playing baseball, and then you had to go fight in Korea or something like that. Like, that's the way it used to be. It's not really like that anymore. There's not a lot of ex-military or current military playing any professional sports. But back then, it was very common. He was one of those guys. And after his career, he went on to be an announcer for 50 freaking years. I mean, he just, you know, he took over that job, and he grabbed it, and he squeezed it for all it was worth, and he did it for 55 years, which is remarkable. And listen, we just had a guy here in Boston who was doing the job with the Red Sox for a very long time, since the 80s, since almost my entire life. Uecker, longer than that. You know, Uecker was always there. You know, he was just such a stalwart in the dialogue of Major League Baseball. He was Mr. Baseball. You know, for a guy who played six seasons and batted 200, you know how good you have to be at your job as an announcer to be Mr. Baseball after that? Like, just remarable. And Major League, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. We were just talking about Major League and Rich Keefe and peeling the clothes off of Rich Keefe. Him as Harry Doyle and the one-liners. With with the guy, the color commentator, he's like, wow, those broadcast classes are really paying off. Just tremendous. And, you know, for a guy who was so good at his main job, which was being the play-by-play announcer for Milwaukee, to also be that good at acting is just really something. He was in Mr. Belvedere, like, guys
wrestling,
like
wrestling, he was part of WrestleMania a couple times,
he was a wrestling announcer, he was in all those things, just naturally a natural entertainer, and that's not how his life started, you know, like it really isn't, like his life started off as a baseball player and a grunt in the military.
But he probably was a kid who was a ham. Like, I bet he was a natural entertainer his whole life. I bet, you know, most likely to make you laugh in high school or something like that. He's kind of the perfect guy when you, like, really put it together.
He played
Major League Baseball,
yeah.
Was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
He had a long, distinguished career after that, made everybody laugh, but could also act and do all these other things. Like, that's a pretty cool career. That's a pretty cool life right there.
Yeah.
I mean, other than, you know, he doesn't have the success, like, he wasn't an MVP in Major League Baseball. It's a pretty cool life.
Yeah, definitely. Are you a big David Lynch guy?
No, I had to actually, when you said David Lynch, Google David Lynch.
Oh, you don't even know who he is.
I don't know who the hell is David Lynch? No disrespect.
You never seen The Elephant Man?
No.
Elephant Man was a great movie. Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
And this guy who's like deformed and he has to teach him how to like read and write and all this stuff. It's pretty interesting. But David Lynch's movies were all pretty creepy. There was like an element of creepiness and sort of eeriness to all of them. What's the one, Stiz, where the guy finds the ear? And then he falls in love with the lounge singer. You know what I'm talking about?
Not Mulholland Drive?
Not Mulholland Drive. It was, what the hell is it called?
I probably haven't seen
it. I think that's the one with Anthony Hopkins. Oh, my God. I can picture the whole thing. He's walking home, and he finds an ear in a field.
Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet. Thank you very much. Blue Velvet. If you haven't seen Blue Velvet, Andy, watch it. It's great.
Okay.
It's really, really good. If you want a primer of David Lynch.
I saw Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is also him.
Our boss, Ken Laird, a big Twin Peaks guy.
Oh, really?
The restaurant or the show?
the show, I believe.
I got you there, didn't I? I was just looking at his Wikipedia page. He attended the School of the Museum of Fine Arts here in Boston.
No way.
Yeah.
How about that?
One of his schools. Also the Corcoran School of Arts and Design and the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts.
I think he shot a bunch of like music videos, too, in like the MTV era.
That's
I forget which ones, but I think that was part of it, too. Let's go to Paul and Quincy real quick. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, guys, I'll try to get it in as quickly as I can. First of all, Bob Uecker in Major League. Nobody's listening anyway. Hell with it.
Yeah.
You were just talking about David Lynch and the Elephant Man. That was early Anthony Hopkins. And interesting fun fact, because one time I heard him being interviewed by students, and Mel Brooks, who I always worry about because he's getting up there, a student asked him, how does it feel to have a career made out of potty humor? And Mel Brooks kind of bristled a little bit, and he said, you know, Mel Brooks produced The Elephant Man. So, regarding Bob Uecker, I had a curiosity question. He posed for his baseball card. I don't remember if he batted lefty or righty, but he posed for his baseball card the opposite way. So I was just wondering what something like that would get these days.
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Usually, like, baseball cards like that with value, I mean, he's a celebrity outside of that, so maybe his are a little bit more, but usually it's, like, misprints and stuff like that. Like, something with, like, an error on it, that'll get you a lot of money, because there's only, like, a few of them, like, a handful, or, you know, and they line them up on the thing they get printed, and it's, like, slightly off-center or something like that. Those go for money, but, yeah, I don't know. I haven't opened up a Beckett in a long time.
No.
I don't know what that's
and
like.
It's a different world
there's
now.
There's one on eBay for $1,000, 1965 Topps baseball card.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
but you can get other ones
for
cheaper, like $50.
But it probably went up today.
I mean. Yeah, definitely. Adam is in Boston. Go ahead, Adam.
You're pronouncing where he's buried at wrong. It's Menominee Falls in Wisconsin.
I definitely didn't say that. Thank you for correcting me. Like I don't know why. I think I said Menominee.
That's tremendous
away.
That he called in to
just to correct me on that. Hey, listen, the guy knows his Wisconsin towns, and I wasn't saying it right. So.
Doesn't it sound like it's an interesting place though? Like I bet it's beautiful. There's probably some like nice nature trails,
dairy farms,
yeah, something
that type of thing.
Yeah.
The Boston Celtics lost to the Toronto Raptors last night. It was bad. We'll get to it next.